Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the weekly podcast for people who play with needles.
Except that it's not weekly anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. We upped the game. Yeah, twice weekly now.
Right. When we first started, it was, we'll do this maybe twice a month and see how it goes. And that lasted a week. And then we rapidly became a twice a week, as we just had too many things to say. So
right.
So here we are.
So, and our guest this week from my needlework store.
Yes.
Monica Pratt. Hi, Monica.
Hi.
Because we haven't talked about Monica at all.
No. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to talk about because that's all we've talked about.
Oh, dear.
So Monica Pratt is the owner of Welcome Stitchery in Crystal Lake, Illinois, which is northwest of Chicago, and about 10 or so miles up the road from me, and that's where I do my drooling and stitch buying and stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, stuff. 29 years. That, you know, I don't know. There's got to be a handful of stores that have been around longer than that, but it can't be much more than that. Do you have any idea? I mean, 29 years is a long time for any small business, especially a specialty business like this.
I would never have guessed that 29 years ago, but yeah, we just had our 29th anniversary back in April. So surprises me too.
I mean, when you go to shows, do you run into people who've been in business longer? Or it probably doesn't come up.
But There's some of us that have just kind of gotten to know each other over the years at the shows. And there are some other shops that are in their 30-some-odd year business. So I'm not the oldest going one around, that's for sure. But there aren't that many of us around, which is kind of sad these days, but
it's just fantastic to have a shop that deals with such a specialty and to be able to still be in business that, you know, as long as you have. And it's not, I mean, every time I go in that store, there's a pretty steady stream of people. So you guys aren't sitting around twiddling your thumbs. I mean, it's a,
We stay pretty busy, but it can be quiet and then it can be crazy. But I know that I was trying to think about it today, and I was thinking there are customers that have been coming for that long.
Really? That long? Oh,
yes. That's so cool.
Yeah. Because we started out in the upstairs of an old Victorian house just a couple blocks away. And then we're able to take the whole house and have moved downstairs. And we were there 9 years and needed more room. So we moved to our present location, which is still in the same area, just a couple blocks away. And we're able to expand a little bit there.
Yeah, but you could use the store next door too.
I feel like I could use more room now, but man, I don't think I could handle another move. Yikes! With what's in there now, was nothing compared to that long ago. And I think back, I had 3 or 4 shelves of fabric, and now there's just fabric everywhere, so it's just amazing the way things have changed, that's for sure.
Have you changed the types of things that you carry?
Well, we have changed in that I'm always adding fabric, and that's kind of my love, is fabric and threads, and to the point that I have nowhere else to go with it. So if I bring home more fabric from another show, I think my husband would probably kill me because he can't can't stretch the walls any farther than they are. We have layers of stuff now. So, but that's kind of where my love lies, is in the fabric. And that has really changed. I mean, that's been one of the big changes, I think, over the years, is the explosion of the hand-dyed fabrics and just the choices in color and counts. And that's been a huge asset for the growth of cross-stitch, for sure. Yeah,
it amazes me. I mean, I've over the years not bought that much fabric, but you always have what I want. I don't recall you ever having to order. And that collection you have there behind the counter is pretty amazing in variety. And yeah, it is packed, but, you must always have to order. That's the part about, you know, just watching the shop and watching you is keeping up with the inventory and, you know, and the number of bags of special orders sitting behind the counter, and just a constant thing ordering specialty stuff.
That's something I do every day, literally. Probably takes up the most of my time. If I'm not waiting on customers, I'm dealing with ordering. And I think that's been a good thing for customers, because I pretty much am willing to order whatever they want if I can. The frustration lies in back orders. Every shop owner will tell you that. That just makes you crazy. And you learn certain companies that it just takes longer to get things from than others. But most people are pretty patient, and
most people,
every once in a while there's somebody that wanted it yesterday. So, but we try to special order a lot. So, if nothing else, it does keep the people coming back. You know, they have to come in to pick it up, or sometimes we're sent, but. I don't know. I guess it goes back to service, and I think that's what a small shop can give people. And whereas the bigger ones can't do as much of that, or don't do as much of that. But that's part of service, I think, is trying to get what anybody wants.
Yeah, I always, whenever I see people order, including myself, order things, and I stand there in the shop and go, yeah, but there's this entire store crammed full of everything.
There's got to be something else here that I like.
No, why can't I take something from what's already in the store?
Exactly. But it's not always the case. So,
no.
Go ahead.
Now, when you started in the upstairs of that home, what is it? Had you been stitching for years and just decided to start a shop? Boy, I'm speaking well tonight. Decided to start a shop, or what?
I have been stitching for quite a while. My sister actually introduced me to cross stitch. We'd always done all kinds of needlework of some sort, crewel or embroidery, or I used to make clothes and all that. She introduced me to cross stitch probably 35 years ago, and I just fell in love with it. And I at one point just I had been a nurse for over 20 years and kind of stayed around too long in intensive care, and kind of hit that point where, boy, I need to change big time. And it just all kind of happened at that time. And I was working, so I had a part-time job with a shop that was a small shop, smaller shop that was in existence. And everything just happened, lined up, unbeknownst, you know, without me planning anything, that they wanted to get out of it and sell it, and it wasn't, I don't think it was doing as well, and so I bought that existing shop and changed the name and started from there. So that's kind of how it began.
And that was kind of in the days when there was a cross stitch shop about every third block, wasn't it? I mean, that was,
yeah, there were quite a few around. I remember, well, that was 1988. So the first, back then, the big show of the year was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I remember that first show that we went to, there were like over 600 exhibitors. It was crazy, just crazy. Unfortunately, that's not the case now, but yeah, it was kind of in the beginning of it just really going great guns.
Yeah.
So shows like that, so not having been to a needlework show like that, but, you know, Gary and I have done other hobbies. Is it a blend of shops and manufacturers and things like that, or are there other things as well?
The regular trade show like that was it was a combination of things. It would be designers, manufacturers, distributors, and then maybe some kind of ancillary type, related type products maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just be a combination of all of that. And it was a convention type show, and you just went and looked and placed orders basically.
Mm-hmm.
So the shows have changed a lot over the years, and they're come and gone, and we're down to minimal shows now, I think, because I guess they can't, you know, they don't have enough support to have these big shows anymore. But I just got back from, well, I didn't just get back. It was back in June from Columbus, which TNNA sponsors a show. That's the National Needlework Association. And that show has always been more yarn, knitting, crochet, that type of thing, and needlepoint. And they've tried over the years. It did used to have some cross-stitch, and it used to be here in Chicago. But I think it got too expensive for to have it, so it has moved out of Chicago, and it's been two, three other places, but in Columbus the last few years. But even the needlepoint was down this year, which was surprising.
Oh.
But, cause there's only two really big needlepoint shows a year, one on the West Coast and January, and then this one was always, well, it used to be in May, now it's in June, but it was down this year, so I'm not sure, you know, what the future of that will be, or it's hard because the yarn is a kind of a totally different industry, timing wise and all of that for them, for their market or their product. So we kind of march to their tune, I think. We used to have other shows for cross-stitch, and now we're really down to one big show, and that's Nashville. Mm. And that's in March. It used to be the week after Super Bowl, and now it keeps getting a little later. So it's like in the beginning of March now. And that's, anybody and everybody that's involved in cross-stitch, that's where you want to be.
Now you started out exclusively as a cross-stitch shop, and needlepoint's made its way into your business, but you're still primarily cross-stitch, right? I mean, it is
right.
That's
right.
What you really focus on.
That was my love, yeah. And it's kind of like as the years go, you need something like you get to a certain point and then you kind of plateau or level off and you kind of need something else. So we, after a few years, we added custom framing, and then it got to the point where maybe I need to do something else. So that needlepoint kind of was the obvious addition because we had a lot of fibers. So it wasn't as hard to integrate needlepoint into that because we didn't have to add anything else so much because we already had a lot of the fibers that can be used in needlepoint too. So that's just been the last 3 or 4 years that we've gradually added needlepoint. So I don't know what the next thing is. I don't know where else to go with anything now. But
well, have you seen when you started and cross stitch was everywhere? Obviously, it's not the way it was then, or we'd still have those stores. But have you seen it cross stitching pretty much hold its own?
I think it's held its own. It's an up and down thing, obviously, kind of like everything else. But people, the big thing is, I think our stitchers are aging is the problem. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to get younger stitchers going. So that's a focus that I have tried to do or work with and tried to foster it, but it's tough because the kids are really pretty spread thin these days, I think, and it's just hard to get them interested. But I tell parents or anybody, if you expose them to it now, maybe they don't stick with it or they don't
right away
do it every day or whatever, but it could be something that they're going to come back to at some point in their life. So I can only hope that that's the case because I think there's real value in just doing some handwork of that type. It's just, I don't know. I get, it's such a relaxing thing for me when I get to do it.
Yeah. How often is that, Monica?
I try to do it every night. Some nights I don't last very long because I don't get started till 10 o'clock or so. But, and so maybe till midnight. But I really try to do it every day at some point. And if I can't, I have a little anxiety about that.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
So running the business hasn't sapped the enthusiasm out of you for stitching. It hasn't, right?
And I'm glad for that because I think that'd be hard to deal with because I think you have to love it to work as hard at it as you need to. It can't just be a hobby, and I was told that from the very beginning. If this is just a hobby, you'll never make it. So yeah. I was always aware of that and wanted to run it as a business and, for quite a while. Obviously my husband worked, so it wasn't as much of a, I didn't need as much out of it until he lost his job. And it has been our sole support for, 20 years. Yeah. Hmm. So, you have to run it as a business to make a living,
Right, right.
So, and you're not going to get rich, but it does. It's a very time-consuming job because I work at it every day. So,
Lee really gets involved. Lee, your husband, anymore, he's pretty involved in the shop. And
now I couldn't do it without him. So, he really handles, the computer end of it and the website. And that was another thing that was one of the steps in adding something, you know, to help. And so we added the website and the shopping cart and all that. So he helps a lot with that. And just recently been pulled kicking and screaming into this social media age that it's not my thing, but I have an employee that's helping a lot with that now, who has got us on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm pleasantly surprised at the response from that. So
the feedback, yeah, because and that's where feedback. You have all your younger people. And yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking about, you know, so lots of different needlework and fiber art things are becoming appealing to young people. And I think part of it is that, like, knitting is an easy one because you can make things that are appealing for a young person to have. And when cross stitches, samplers, or is something that they don't want to own at the end of the project, that right, I think right. is one of the things that we need to consider is, you know, what designers are making things that a young person would say, hey, that's cool looking, I like that, and mm-hmm. I'm willing to spend the, you know, dozens of hours stitching it. Right. You know, because they don't want to stitch something and then say, all right, I have no idea what to do with this.
Now what do I do with this? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there are designers that are trying to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
There's jewelry and leather type things, you know, banded type bracelets that you can
right.
stitch on. And when Punch Needle got really popular again, you can punch on denim, and we had classes, and you know, the kids could, that's a little bit more free spirit, they could go with that mm-hmm. and punch on other things besides, you know, just something
yeah.
they're gonna frame again, you know. So
right
yeah, and I think we need more of that. I'm always looking for better kits and stuff for children.
And I think the size of the project matters too, you know, because it's easy to hold a child's interest or, you know, young stitcher's interest for, you know, some hours. But when you, you know, I had somebody come over. So I'll ask you both this question. So I'm stitching the Debbie Rowley Diamond Delights, and I'm probably halfway through, let's say. And I had a friend over and was asked, how long did it take you to do that? And I honestly couldn't answer because I don't really measure in time like that. But it must be dozens of hours, literally, you mm-hmm. know. And I measured it in Netflix. I said, well, it took me Orange is the New Black, and it took me half of House of Cards, and it took me this season of Better Call Saul and a little bit of Preacher so far. So that's how long it took. I didn't know any other way to measure, because how many hours is that? I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's different for everyone, because I'm stitching pretty slowly because I'm learning as I go. But, you know, if you have a project that takes that long, you better know you're going to want to do it and enjoy it. So yeah, I can appreciate all the people who told me at the beginning, start with something small because you might not like it. And I'm just very stubborn, and so I ignored all of that. But for a young person, you know, a small project that they can sort of do and finish and then have that reward of, I made that thing, I think
right,
it's important,
right.
you know. So I think size does matter as far as the, you know, project and what you're willing to invest in. Size and complexity, I guess, too, because if it's not that complex, even a larger piece can go a lot faster, right. I would imagine.
Yeah, I think you're right. They need more instant gratification. And,
mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing that strikes me too, as I'm stitching, was when I was young, that, you know, you stitched in DMC floss and that was it. And when I came back to this, I was just enamored with all of the different metallics and the neon rays and all these different types of effect stitching that you can do. And I think that's something that you could easily manipulate into something that's appealing, especially to, you know, a 7 or 8 year old. Anything that's got glitter on it is you know, immediately appealing. Right. So maybe that's what we need is a designer that specializes in glitter things for little kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, that's got, for, you know, Christine mentions about the thread changes. I mean, from when you started to now, it's got to be the same thing for you. I mean, what was there much more than DMC floss and anchor floss when you started?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Honestly, say when I think about when we first started, all we had was DMC floss and probably some Krynek metallics. And I think that was it, literally.
The good old days.
but that's opens up a whole new world on this other stuff, so.
Right. Well, that's what, I don't know, is a 30-year store fiber? Maybe not that much. I mean, you have a lot of fiber in that place.
We have a lot of fiber. Unfortunately, there isn't wall space to, like, have it all out. So some of it, certain fibers are in cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, literally behind the counter. So that, to me, that's not ideal, but it's there somewhere. So we just drag it out and, like, silken colors and dinky dyes and needlepoint silk and soie, those are all in cases, because there just isn't room to put it up on the wall. But I've had an interest. I had a customer come in today, and she had made an interesting observation. She had been to another shop in another state, and she said, "Oh, it was huge, and she had a lot of stuff, and she had lots and lots of threads." And she said it was all, I think it was all out and hanging and everywhere. She said, but it was so overwhelming, I couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of interesting, because I feel bad because some of this stuff is not out where you can get your hands on it. And I hadn't had anybody say that or, you know, have that feeling before, but she was so overwhelmed that she couldn't deal with it. So, you know, sometimes too much is,
yes, very much so,
as bad as not enough, I guess, for some people.
Well, I imagine too, you know, so as I'm stitching this piece, and I stitch it with exactly what was recommended, color and type of thread, but if I were to go in like the next one of the next pieces that I was looking at, some of the colors I'm not really fond of, so I'm thinking about changing them, and I kind of have an idea. But if I went in there and I'm trying to replace, you know, a yellow with a slightly lighter yellow, and there's 14 different yellows, you know, that fit that category, it becomes crippling, because you can't pick, you know, which one. Mm-hmm. Because then, I don't know about you guys, but I always have the, what if I chose the wrong one?
Yeah.
And then you start stitching and you're thinking the whole time, what if this isn't the right one? What if I should have chosen the other one? And then, yeah, you can fall down that very quickly.
Yeah.
Sometimes choice is a bad thing.
Yeah. That's where the store comes in. See, that's where people need to appreciate, because, I mean, I'm terrible with colors. I need help with color all the time. But, you know, when I go into the shop there, between Monica and Mary and Donna, you know, that they all can work color six ways to Sunday. And so
right.
You know, what's the right yellow? Well, you know, that you can get that kind of help. And to me, that's where the shop is so important these days.
Mm-hmm.
That people don't, and you are at a disadvantage, and you can't get to a shop.
Correct.
And,
which is still, yeah,
I mean, you live in the largest metropolitan area in the world and you can't get to a shop. It's ridiculous.
The next, so next week I'm going to be in Manhattan for 2 weeks straight, working, but I'm going to take a few days off and I think I'm going to make a pilgrimage to the two shops in Manhattan. Of all the things, you know, there's 47 million flower shops and two needlework shops. So I'll be able to do that. But it, you know, I was looking at, so I'm kind of enamored right now with Jane Nicholas's stump work books. So I'm looking at those and trying to plot out how I can do some of the stitches. And she gives, she stitches them itself, but then she gives DMC, equivalents. So I could just go with what she's doing, but there's certain things, like I look at this and say, okay, this rose, I like it, but I really want a different color. But for me, shopping online, you're prisoner to what online can display. So not only do you not get the texture and the sheen and the hand of the thread, which, I mean, you talk about fabric as having a hand. I don't know if you'd use the same word with threads, but, to get an idea of that. And online, you have none of that. You're basically guessing. So the only good thing is that at least DMC flosses are inexpensive, so you can kind of bracket what you want. And that's what I'm finding I'm doing is I know I want, let's say, a purple, but I don't know if I want it, you know, this purple is kind of a grapey purple, and this one is more of an aubergine, and I don't know when I get them which one is going to feel right. So I kind of go a little bit to either side, a little bit to the red side, and a little bit to the blue side of where I think I want. And then, you know, hope that, that one of those is the right thing. And then, you know, what's the loss? It was, you know, pretty inexpensive, and I'm sure it will get used for something. So that's kind of how I go about shopping for threads now, is bracketing with color, because I just don't know.
Right. Yeah, and you can't get a true picture of color, of course, online. And
No.
fabric. And this day and age of the wonderful photography, I'm still not sure why patterns don't photograph as well as they do. You know, the colors can really be off, and you can't always go by the picture.
How many discussions have we had where you look at the picture and you go, I'd never stitch that in a million years. Then you see the actual threads and you can't wait to get started on it. I mean,
Right.
But that whole photography thing, you know, that's the white balance. That's, you can't just do snapshots. You got to do white balance. I mean, I've been playing around photographing some stuff I've stitched. And, putting a gray card down there and adjusting the white balance and a lot of monkeying around to get the color just right, in addition to, lighting that'll show some of the texture and in focus. You know, here's a crazy idea, something in focus. But, you just can't do snapshots. But then for a lot of these designers, I'm sure the thought of yet another expense as they're trying to get a design out to have a good photographer do the job right, and then to have it printed correctly, it's just, you know, forget it. Take a picture and put it on the cover and call it good. I mean, I understand.
The other thing too is that, and it seems like a simple thing, but you don't think about it until you take the picture and you look at it. You have to be square on that piece, because if your lens is not completely perpendicular, everything distorts, and it distorts so obviously that it's almost impossible to do without a tripod. And then the lighting, you know, you have to be careful that the lighting isn't shadowed by the camera. Like Gary and I think we'll probably do a whole hour's worth of photography talk one day, because, you know, I've been monkeying around with it as well, you know, trying to figure out what's the right lighting. And it's never lighting on the camera. It's always lighting off the camera and all that kind of stuff. So, a little bit of it is guesswork, right? You have to have a little bit of faith.
I think that would be very interesting, because there's a little science to that and an expertise that someone needs to.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here because I sit at the foot of our bed when we record, and looking at the Diamond Delight 3 pillow that you had done for me. And, you know, the light is just right. And so you see the reflection off of every one of the beads in the corners, and the Krynek is reflecting. And I want to go get my camera and photograph this the way it is right now, because it's, it's really showing off, what that design does. And by the way, I'm glad I spent the money for the lady who does that pillow, because she did a magnificent job.
Oh, good. Good. I thought your stitching was outstanding. It was perfection. So the two things combined have made a very nice finished piece for sure.
Yeah, she did a wonderful job. It sits here. I mean, it's what Margo wanted in her collection of pillows on the bed here, and it's perfect. Yeah, she did a beautiful job.
It brings up a question, though, if you don't mind my interrupting. But
go ahead.
Thank you. That's fine, Gary. We'll take it up later. So here's my question. So for all of those of us who are in the vast wasteland between these oases of needlework shops, if you were, like, let's say I had this piece and I do a lot of stitching. So if I was doing a pillow, I would probably do it myself. But if I wanted to get it framed and I wasn't taking it to a specialty needlework shop, I was just going to take it to a framer's, how would you instruct them on how to frame it? So what are the things? Because, you know, I'm imagining bringing this in and having somebody look at it. And first of all, they're not going to know about blocking. They're not necessarily going to know about the tension of the canvas. So how would you instruct them how to do it the right way? Or is it not worth it and you should send it away to somewhere and they can do it properly?
Well, I think you have to seek out somebody that knows what they're doing when it comes to framing needlework, because I think it's a little bit different animal, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The canvas needs to be blocked if it's not square. Fabric usually doesn't need to be blocked per se. I would prefer that it be clean. I can't tell you how many things come in to be framed that are just dirty. And it breaks my heart to for people to pay what they have to pay for custom framing and it's not clean. But we try not to, as a rule, wash people's pieces because I don't feel like I can take that responsibility. Because even if they say they don't hold you responsible, they will hold you responsible. Mm-hmm. If something, you know, the threads bleed or whatever. I have washed people's pieces. I have, you know, held my breath and done it. But in general, I don't. So for fabric, wrinkles and stuff will stretch out. We don't have a problem with that so much. But it being clean, I think, is a huge issue. And allowing enough fabric to work with is the second issue. And I always joked about, we've gotten in some things where they've given us, you know, less than an inch or something. And I would joke and say, you know, someday somebody's going to bring a piece in and they're going to have stitched right off the edge of the fabric. And one day somebody did.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I mean, they literally stitched to the edge of the fabric. There was not an open thread left. It was beautiful and it was huge. It was probably 24 by 38 inches or something, and it was just this huge piece. So, I mean, we sew extra fabric on a lot of times. That we sewed extra fabric on, and of course they lost some of the stitching because there's nothing you could do with that. But giving the person enough to work with is important. And then you just, I think you need to question them on, we use all acid-free materials. And you may not know to ask about that because some places may not routinely do that. Obviously a regular paper mat is cheaper than a rag mat, but I don't even have any paper mats. So I think that's important. What else? I mean, for canvas, we lace all of the canvas. For fabric, we pin it with stainless steel pins into acid-free foam core. You can get it more perfect. You can line it up more perfectly that way than lacing. Lacing just takes a lot more time, I think, to have it perfect. So there's some questions you can ask about the technique and how they do it. We've had to reframe some pieces that people bring in from different places, and I always hold my breath when I open up something and see what's inside. Because there's glue, there's staples, there's just cardboard. It's just, and you immediately see the acid, what the acid from all of that has done to the fabric. So,
Christine, Monica's being diplomatic, but my answer to your question would be send it to somebody who knows what they're doing. Because, she just, obviously, you picked up on it. All those little things that those hours and hours and hours of careful stitching all can be ruined by acid in paper. And not being mounted right, and custom framing is expensive, but you pour your heart and soul into a piece and get it just right, the last thing you want is some cheesy frame job to ruin it, and not ruin it immediately, but ruin it over time. And then pretty soon you look at it and you go, what happened to that? And that $50 you saved having it done at some big box store or something, all of a sudden is pennies because your piece is ruined and probably not recoverable. I remember one time, Monica, when somebody brought in, I was in the store there and somebody brought in one that had been done by somebody who didn't know what they were doing, and off you went to the back to try and save it and get it back to, something reasonable. But, it's all those little things, the lacing, the stainless steel pins, all that stuff that just, it's worth the money. It hurts when you write the check.
I know. But it's a time consuming process, as well as if you're using those materials, obviously they cost more. A rag mat costs more, and acid free foam core costs more than regular foam core, all of that stuff. So sometimes it's like you're comparing apples to oranges. If people don't understand exactly what all's involved in it. If a certain place has a 60% off coupon or whatever, they don't understand why the cost is what it is when they can go somewhere else and do that. But
I think I'm fairly well convinced that that will not be happening. So good job.
Well, and the other thing is when I drop off a piece there at Welcome Stitchery, I mean, I want to see it finished. I want it back, but I try real hard to just forget about it till I get the call, because it does take time, and you're framing for a ton of people, and you have you and Sandy just the two of you, right? And
that's it. Yeah.
And you have to run a store.
Sometimes ideally I shouldn't have to be doing all that, but, I don't have anybody else. And even with the two of us, we check each other. She might stretch something, but I check it before it gets put in the frame, or vice versa, or she puts it together. And if it has glass on it, then I check it before it gets closed up, because you look at it so much, you might miss a little fleck of something in there because you just can't see, everybody can't see everything. So we check each other, and it doesn't get closed up until that happens. So, But yeah, she does a good job. And
she does more than a good job. It's excellent stuff. I mean, everything is just spot on. It's just beautiful. She does a good job. she's pretty
lucky,
special.
Yeah. She does a great job, I should say. Not a good job, a great job. Yeah. So I'm lucky. I'm lucky to have her.
Yeah. And I mean, that, my sense is that you run a lot of pieces through that framing operation there. That's
a
pretty steady thing.
I don't usually count them except after our May framing sale. And halfway through the month, I get nervous and I count, and I shouldn't do that because it's like, oh my God, there's 140 pieces sitting here, and then I freak out. So, but we try to keep them moving. We do get bogged down sometimes, obviously. So,
yeah, you have, for that May thing, you have people that just save up, right? I mean, they just save up pieces.
That's probably. It's good and it's bad. So, I mean, some people wouldn't otherwise have it framed. So that's a good thing. And then there's others that wait for it, which is, you know, that's fine too. We also do it if you frame a piece that's a class piece that you've taken a class at the shop for, you get a discount on the framing for that. So that helps too.
Right.
I know it's expensive, and
expensive is a relative thing. I mean, it is.
Yeah. It's like you said, if the materials and the amount of hours that you're putting in, so then maybe you think about it in terms of, if you're going to have this piece for 30 years, divide the cost by 30 years, and it doesn't seem so expensive anymore.
Right, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Now you have an ongoing list of classes. I mean, classes are a pretty steady thing for you. Do you get more needlepoint participation in those, or cross stitch, or is it pretty much an even mix?
In the last couple of years, I would say we have more needlepoint interest. Mm-hmm. We used to offer more classes than we are currently offering. I would try to teach something like with linen, unlinen, different stitches, whatever, different techniques. And, we did very well with that for quite a few years. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't getting as much interest. Mary McGuire teaches most of our canvas classes, and the interest in that has grown considerably. So I kind of backed off on the other for a while, and, you know, it was hard to, was not enough nights in the week to schedule these things. And, if it didn't work out, you know, how one night might work out for one person and one person only. And so I was canceling a lot of classes and stuff. So now, the past couple schedules, as far as the basic, people want to learn how to cross stitch or learn, introduction to linen or punch needle, any beginning needle point, any of the basic ones, I just, literally set up a time with that person, and we just have a class. It won't be, you know, 2.5 hours long, but any of those, you can get somebody going in an hour, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mary's classes are, very popular, and the good thing is, she has a following. She has people that just want to take her classes. Some people just want to get out for the night. others, obviously, they're wanting to learn something. And, but we're seeing new people, becoming mixed in the group of the old timers kind of thing. So
that's good.
Encouraging. That's very encouraging. And that's a good thing for the shop and for her and for that people are wanting to learn something. And we very carefully try to find projects that incorporate new stitches, new techniques that we haven't covered before or whatever. So it kind of keeps the ones that have taken classes, it can keep them interested too. So
yeah,
we run like every 3 months or whatever we put out a class schedule. So
yeah, that's what keeps it going. That's what keeps those people in there. And mm-hmm. I'm really glad to hear that you're getting new people in there, because this hobby needs that desperately.
I know. That's very encouraging.
What do you think the ways of outreach are? So, you know, this is easy because it's needleworkers talking to other needleworkers, and then everybody's going to conferences of needleworkers that, you know, or going to fairs of needlework. And so you're basically speaking to the same group. So how do you get out of that? How do you reach into areas of people where they have no idea that this exists?
That's a good question. As far as young people, I've gone into the schools when I've had an opportunity and had some connection that I could link up with somebody and tried having some little after school classes or whatever. We've done that. I know that in some parts of the country, and I don't think we have one in this part of the country yet, but I know like out in California, they've had, we used the word fair, and it was some type of that type of atmosphere where people came, you know, it was a huge organized thing, and you had volunteers that you just set up tables and stations, and people could, and children, anybody could sit down and try their hand at something, and there were volunteers there to teach. I've done that at the fair, you know, different places, but that's
but it sounds like the social media effort has, I mean, that, like Christine said, is really going to tap into younger people. I was really curious when you started the Facebook and Instagram, what kind of response you would get. And from what you said earlier, sounds like you really have noticed something out of that. Is that?
Yeah, we have. And I mean, we've just been doing it a little over a month or 6 weeks or whatever. And it has been surprising that the number of responses of people that, you know, respond with a message or sometimes with questions, and we try to putting pictures up of, like, we put pictures of some of the canvases that were very striking from that I bought at Columbus, at the Columbus show, and so that would, I mean, I only do a printed newsletter like 3 or 4 times a year, so they're kind of, you know, there's a lot of space in between there, whereas with this, you can actually get something out there right away. It seems like by the time I make notes and everything of new stuff, by the time the newsletter goes out, it's not new anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't keep up with this. So that definitely is a more timely way to get information out there.
Right. Yeah, well, that, and then like many shops, people can order through your website and you'll ship product to them too, which all ties in together. You bring in those new customers through the internet. Yeah.
I understand that, you know, it's not the same, but, and yet with people that do not have a shop near them, that's all they have to rely on. So, it is a source of, some materials and stuff and patterns for them. Not ideal because you can't touch and feel, but, pretty much send something out every day. So some days better than others, but,
Yeah, that hidden channel of business there where, Well, and yeah, you're able to do that, and then I'm sure you have customers who are fairly regular and can't always drive to the shop, so you'd help them out with that. Yeah. Monica, this has been fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so nice to meet you, finally.
Me too. I appreciate being asked to do this. I was nervous about it, but...
Nah.
It's easy to talk about something you love, though, so...
Yep.
That's a good thing.
All right, thanks, Monica, and we'll have the links, the Facebook and the website links for Welcome Stitchery and Instagram on the page. So be sure and check those out. And if you're in the Chicago area looking for needle workshops, Crystal Lake's a good place to go. It's a great little town too, lots of restaurants and other things. So you can walk around all day long and then go buy some stitching stuff and. Yeah, it's a neat town. It is. It's one of those small farm country towns that they've done it right. I mean, that town is busy all the time with all the shops.
They really do
a
good job of, yeah, they try to keep the downtown viable and nice variety of shops now. So we have groups that come for the weekend and stay in a hotel or 4 days or whatever. Every year, same groups come, and it's nice because, I mean, they come for the shop, but the whole downtown really does, it's an advantage for them too because of the kitchen shops and, you know, just interesting little gift shops and stuff like that. So, it helps all of us when there's, and that variety is there in the area. So
yeah, parking on Saturdays is a tough thing to acquire. So
yeah, parking's another issue sometimes.
Yeah,
but
that's, you know, that's the great thing about the town. And so yep, Starbucks right across the street for you coffee drinkers. So you know it's a package deal.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Thank you, Monica.
Talk to you, Christine. Thank you.
Such a pleasure to meet you.
All right, and that's going to be it for this episode of Fiber Talk. Thanks for listening. You find us at wetalkfiber.com and twice weekly, Wednesday and Sunday. Yes.
There you go.
That's what we do. Thanks for listening.